have Elijah start laughing. Okay, tonight's teaching. It's going to be on chapter 3 of Ruth, really. And, man, I hope you guys, if you can enjoy a third of how much I enjoyed getting to read what, seeing some things pointed out in one of my favorite books. Now, what I'm going to be pointing out, which is important, you're not going to get it from one perspective. But what I have here is the Paragraph Bible. You have Adam Clark's commentary here. Hesed in the Bible. Then the Rotherham. And what's not in here is E.W. Bollinger's Companion Bible, which there's just a little bit in that. But if you just read the book of Ruth, yeah, it's a neat story. And you have no idea what you just missed. And so, trying to get make sure I run over time. All I can think of is to look at an atom or a cell under a microscope doesn't bring it to life. It's already alive. But it feels like it's being brought to life, it's being manifested, there's a whole universe in it. And that's what because of this commentary and the stuff that my father has graciously given me. This is one of my favorites too. Look at this beautiful book, 200 years old. You can read commentary and start seeing things being explained. It's like a magnifying glass and another magnifying glass and another magnifying glass. You get to see, you gotta be kidding me. It's just one chapter. But before you read the book of Ruth, you can't appreciate it without this book. This is Hesed in the Bible by Gluck. I don't know if you pronounce that right. But he's a Hebrew who's going to explain there's a word. There's a word called Hesed, H-E-S-E-D. And there is no equivalent in English. You can't translate it one single word. They should have transliterated. You should have brought it across. But translators didn't. Rotherham will call it loving kindness. So you at least know it's code. So every time you see loving kindness, it is the word Hesed. So when we're reading, say Hesed. Interesting also, E.W. Bollinger, when he looks at Hesed in Ruth, he calls it, guess what? Loving kindness. I thought that was kind of interesting because these are completely different people, but it's not loving kindness. Here is some notes what this word Hesed is. And you're not going to know it if you read the Bible, because if you read in the King James, it's going to say mercy, kindness, loving kindness. But that's not what King David was praying when he was talking about Yahweh's kindness, from loving kindness. What's he talking about? Being kind? That's the word has said. So I'm just going to breeze through here quickly on some of the highlights of what this word means. If I guess before I start reading this, it is an obligatory covenant. That means because I've done this, you have to do that. And as long as I do this, you have to do that. And as long as you do this, I have to do that. Marriage is supposed to be that. Marriage is not supposed to be taking somebody hostage. You made a covenant. You're it. No. You're supposed to be, it has said, it's an obligatory covenant. You're obligated. It's your duty. So one of the words for has said is duty. On page 40, it's going to say it's your duty to do this thing. So when David or somebody starts calling on the loving kindness, he's saying, this is your duty. You have to do this. It's reciprocity, an obligatory loyalty characteristic of Hesed. Let me see here. Whoever does not act in accordance with Hesed was expelled from the family or alliance. That's on page 46. So if you're not doing what Hesed is, well, here's what Yahweh will say. Deuteronomy 28 says, if you do this, you will receive this. So if you're obedient to the Deuteronomy 28, the blessing, obviously not the cursings. If you're obedient, you can get on your knees and in a respectful way say, Yahweh, I am do this. I did what you said. You told me to do this, and I'm standing here in faith. George Mueller would do that. He would get on his knees and in times of possible doubt, and he would confess, I have done everything you told me to do. I did this, I did this, I did this, I did this, as if he was presenting it to a court. And George Mueller, at least what I took from that book, was he would say, by presenting what he had did, his faith would level back up. Because it says with Hesed is one, it is mutually obligatory. Let me see here. It says in 58, it's going to say mercy. It's going to say, I desire mercy. No. Yahweh desires Hesed. I owe my mother, even if she wasn't my mother. Honor your mother and your father. But what she has done in my life, you owe her. Aaron, you owe her. What if she's a creep? Now, Yahweh goes, I don't forget what she did. That is chesed. And if I am not paying her back at least what she did, then Yahweh goes, you don't expect any chesed from me. So when it says that Yahweh does not want sacrifice, he wants chesed. Let's see, Proverbs 31, a woman of valor, not virtue, in today's understanding, chesed is on her lips. In everyday life, chesed was a reciprocal, between relationships, masters and a servant. He's always there for me. See here. Then here's another, and this is going to go into Ruth, but it's a specific word. If you do this, Yahweh has to do this. Okay. If Ruth had not, so this is neat because this was written, my notes from this book before this teaching. If Ruth had not practiced chesed with her dead husband, how could she have expected chesed from Yahweh? So this, the story of Ruth is her chesed to her dead husband. That's the thing. And you're going to miss it otherwise. And some of these things, you'll be reading it. And as I was reading some of these notes by Adam Clark, my heart rate's going up. I'm going, oh my goodness, look what's going on here. But you'll miss it if you don't understand it. What is this woman doing in the book of Ruth? The book of Ruth is going to be her chesed to the dead husband. Is her dead husband alive?
No.
He's asleep. I think 53 different places when people die, Yahweh says they're asleep. So why is she still honoring a covenant with that person? Because she's going to take care of her mother-in-law. Why? The chesed to her husband. Here's what this thing is. And when Yahweh sees Ruth practicing that chesed, we're going to get to find what's going to happen to Ruth. You want to talk about a pretty woman type thing. It's incredible. But chesed in the Bible, you will not get that from this teaching. You have to read this. E.W. Bullinger, here's some really neat things about E.W. Bullinger. And it's not just E.W. Bullinger, but a lot of it came from this. The time period, and so this teaching is really for anybody who's read the book of Ruth. If you haven't read the book of Ruth, you got to read it, then watch this. What's the time period? Because a lot of times you're reading, and it looks like it's right, I was reading this with Adam Clark, Edersheim, and he was saying that the 10 plagues of Egypt lasted over 10 months. I don't know if that's true, but if it lasted over 10 months, it's a lot. It's not. I used to read and think it happened over and over and over and over again. But anyways, the time period that we're going to be looking at is from the Passover unto Pentecost. That's the time period. Okay? How many days is Pentecost after Passover?
90.
What's a pentagram have?
50.
Pentagrams have 5. Oh, Pentecost means 50. Pentecost is Greek. It's not Pentecost. I wrote it down here, but I forgot that it's a Pekosh. It's Strong's number 86453. Or Pesah. And Passover is called Shavat. So it's a time period from Shavat to Pesah. A Passover, Oh, and then here's some other things about it. Because we're going to see in Ruth chapter 1, verse 22. See, Yahweh puts these little hints in there. You're not going to get it. Ruth chapter 1, verse 22, it says it was at barley harvest. E.W. Bullinger is going to say that means it was Passover. So he's going to say right there. And then the other time period is going to be, it's going to show later on at the very end when the story starts really steaming up, if you will. It looks like it happened real soon. Now, this is before Pentecost. So how long has that taken? 50 days. And how do we know that was Pentecost? E.W. Bullinger is going to point this out because it's the beginning of the wheat harvest. And then when you find out what's going to really happen in the story, it's going to make sense. This is happening in Yahweh's feasts. How many feasts?
How many months is that?
It's 50 days.
Between Passover and Pentecost?
Yeah. It's 50 days.
So, sign.
Yes, there's 50 days. So it's going to be a 50-day period. Let's see. Okay, we did his sin in the Bible. And also something that's really important is Ruth is what you call a proselyte. So Ruth is not like a Gentile. And we're going to find out that Ruth is going to become a Hebrew. And in the story, had Ruth been a man, she would have been circumcised. And so she wasn't circumcised, so she's going to become a Hebrew. And she's going to back it up. So we turn to the book of Ruth. Oh, also, Ruth is Strong's number 87327. And I'm getting these pronunciations from the Blue Letter Bible. But it would be pronounced R-U-W-T-H. Like Ruth. I can't quite do that one very well, but Ruth. Interesting thing for this year, just to give you a time period. Let's see here. The Festival of Weeks, I have it down, April 19th to 27th would have been Pentecost, or it was Passover. So it was around April, May. It was kind of an idea, at least in 2019. Page 285. Did you ask which Ruth?
Second Ruth.
Second book of Ruth.
Okay. That's it. 285. E.W. Bullinger is going to say this is about 1326 B.C. When was Moses' time period? Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
1492.
Moses left Egypt 1491. Or went back to 1491. That, and King David, which is kind of, I'm not quite sure this timeline, because King David was right around 1000. Okay, so this is happening approximately 300 years before King David. We'll turn to chapter 2. So what happened is in the beginning of chapter 1, Ruth, mother-in-law, or actually Elimelech, which means means El is my king, and his wife Ruth went to Moab and with her two sons, and her two sons and her husband all died. And it is believed from the commentary that the reason why they went to Moab was because of famine in Bethlehem in the area. These guys are Bethlehemites. They're from, so I forgot to say, it's also happening in Bethlehem. I guess the first usage of Hesed in it is chapter 1, verse 8. Then said Naomi to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each one to your own house, your mother. Yahweh deal with you in Hesed, as ye have dealt with the dead and with me." And she's going to tell her daughter-in-laws to go back to your home, get married, get taken care of, go back to the land you came from, get married, have families, whatever, restart your life. And Ruth's going to say, "I'm not going." She goes, "Were you," in verse 16, and Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave thee, to go back from following thee. For whether thou goest, I will go, and whether thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy Elohim, my Elohim." And Adam Clark and the Paragraph Bible, I believe, are going to say this means she's becoming a proselyte. When she says, "Your God is my God," why is she doing this? Is this because she loved Naomi?
That was
no. It's her hased to her dead husband. She owes her dead husband to take care of her mother-in-law. So here's this woman. What kind of woman is this?
Wonderful.
She's, because if you don't know about the word hesed, why is she going with her mother-in-law? I don't know. Maybe they're really good friends. Maybe she's a good cook. Maybe she had a bad home life. That's not what y'all can explain. No, it's because of the hesed to her dead husband. I owe it to you. So they go to Bethlehem, which is chapter 2. If somebody would read, actually we're going to read all of chapter 2. If somebody would read that. Mom, would you?
Now Naomi had an acquaintance of her husband's, a man of great integrity, of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess, aid unto Naomi, said, I don't have an S in there, I apologize. Let me go, I pray thee, to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose eyes I may find favor. And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she went her way and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and it happened to her to light upon the portion of the field land belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. And lo, Boaz, coming from Bethlehem, said to his reapers, Yahweh be with you. And they said to him, Yahweh bless thee. Then said Boaz to his young man that was set over the reapers, whose is this maiden? And the young man that was set over the reapers answered and said, the Moabitish maiden is she who came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she said, let me glean, I pray thee, and gather among the sheaves after the reapers. So she came in and hath continued from that time all morning until just now, and hath not rested in the house even for a little. And Boaz said unto Ruth, hearest thou not, my daughter? Do not go glean in any other field, neither indeed shalt thou pass on from hence. But here shalt thou keep fast by my maidens. Thine eyes be on the field which they shall reap, and go thou after them. Have I not commanded the young men that they touch thee not? And when thou art athirst, then go unto the vessels and drink of what the young men shall draw. Then she fell upon her face and bowed herself to the ground and said unto him, wherefore have I found favor in thine eyes, that thou shouldest take notice of me, seeing that I am a stranger? And Boaz answered and said to her, it hath been told me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thy husband, and how thou hast left thy father and mother and the land of thy nativity, and come unto a people whom thou knowest not aforetime. Yahweh recompense thy deed, and let thy reward be full from Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel, unto whom thou hast come to take refuge under his wings. And she said, let me find favor in thine eyes, my Lord, for that thou hast comforted me, and for that thou hast spoken unto the heart of thy handmaid, though I be not as one of thine own handmaids. And Boaz said to her at mealtime, draw nigh hither and eat of the bread.
So I can pause there for a second. Yahweh would say that during harvest, if there was a, if somebody was like a vagrant, if they were a widow, if they were impoverished, that they could walk in the fields, and I'm not going to say this exactly right, but the stuff that gets dropped and left behind, they get to keep it. They had to go out and pick it up. They didn't work panhandles on the corner of the street begging for stuff. But widows, they could come in, they could clean things up. And I think it was like in the corner, you weren't supposed to reap in the corners of the field, and this is where the widows and the orphans and the destitute could come pick things up. Boaz sees a girl coming in, goes, who's the girl? And Adam Clark and the paragraph Bible, they both believe that she was very, very, very beautiful. She would have been easy to recognize. And they see her, what is she doing? Why is she out gleaning in the fields, people?
Because of her husband.
Where's her mother-in-law? She's out there, she's going to feed her mother-in-law. I don't know why Naomi's not out there, but she's not. Here she is, and why is she taking care of Naomi? Because in a chesed for her new God and for her dead husband. And then it, what's neat is, we find out Elimelech is a very great man of integrity. Okay? And what does he do is he sees what she does, and what does he do? He's going to invite her in. He's going to say, I have heard what you have done, how you left everything. Why did she do it? Because you're chesed. You're going to go, man, if anything, I will refresh what this has been, because the famine's over in Bethlehem, because all the commentators talking about, they probably turned to foreign gods. Again, this is in and out of the book of Judges, in and out of poverty. And here's this woman being, what a great leader she is. And then you're going to get to see what kind of man Boaz is. He's going to say, not only can you glean here, And also in the notes, they're going to say that they would have set up a temporary tent. It's going to say a house. It would have been for the gleaners to come in. You could eat, take a rest, get in the shade. And he's going to say, let her come in here, get drinks and everything else. She's going to give her red carpet treatment. Why? Because of her chesed for her dead husband. And that's, and actually what she's doing, guess what Israel's supposed to be doing? Israel's supposed to be doing what she's doing. She's doing it. She's a real deal. And that is actually Boaz has said to Yahweh. And you know, sometimes you're out there doing the right thing and it looks like nobody's noticing, right? And you're going to see how thankful later on, especially at the resurrection, Boaz and Naomi and Ruth are going to be because of their chesed. Yahweh watches people who keep the chesed. Okay, you can go back and keep reading.
And Boaz said to her at mealtime, draw nigh hither and eat of the bread and dip thy morsel in the vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers, and there was reached to her parched corn, and she did eat and was satisfied. and left thereof remaining. And when she rose up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, Even between the sheaves let her glean, and reproach her not. Yea, moreover, draw out for her from the bundles, and leave behind, that she may glean it, and rebuke her not.
He's saying, let her get even more than she's under the Levitical law. We're supposed to let her feed. He's going to go start dropping some stuff, guys. Drop some more stuff. Okay, so they're like, all right.
Somebody else.
Tim, would you read?
I will. 17. So she gleaned in the field until the evening, and beat out that which had gleaned, and there was about an ephah of barley, and took it up, and came unto the city. And when her mother-in-law had seen what she had gleaned, she brought forth and gave her what had been left remaining. After that she was satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, In what place hast thou gleaned today? And where hast thou wrought? May he that took notice of thee be blessed.
Can we pause it for just a second so we'll come back to so thank you. I'm sorry to keep interrupting, but I want to make sure I'm getting all the stuff that's in there. They're going to say that Naomi, when she came back in town, they believe that she was a very highly esteemed person when she left. Her and her husband, they left, they had a lot of stuff. Now they're coming back because they have nothing. Now they're being forced to glean. Okay? Later on, I don't have the measures of the here, but later on, she's going to get some more. When it says corn just means grain. But Boaz is going to give her some, and we're going to be like, I don't know what that means. Well, it could be up to 6.5 gallons of grain, depending on the measurement. And so even the, I think is the paragraph Bible, no. No, Adam Clark's going to say that what the Hebrew traditions believe that Yahweh had to give her strength to carry all this grain back. So here she goes out, and here Naomi, maybe Naomi was crippled. I don't know why she wasn't out there working too. But she comes back with all this grain going, Jackpot, look what I got. How did you get this? I think I stopped you at so she.
Okay, so 19b.
Yeah.
So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought and said, The name of the man with whom I wrought today is Boaz. Then said Naomi to her daughter-in-law, Blessed be thou of Yahweh, who hath not left of his hesed to the living and to the dead. And Naomi said to her, Near to us is this man, of our own kinsman is he. And Ruth the Moabitess said, Yea, for he said unto me, By my young men shalt thou keep fast until they have ended up in my harvest, ended all my harvest. And Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, Good is it for my daughter that thou go forth with thy maidens, and that they may meet thee not in any other field. So she kept fast of the maidens of Boaz to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law.
I'm going to pause there. So thank you. This is a time period of 50 days. You would know that, right?
Right.
So E.W. Bullinger say at the beginning in chapter 1, verse 22, it was the beginning of barley harvest, which was Passover. And now it is the end of barley harvest and the beginning of the wheat harvest, which is Shavat or Pentecost. But it would be Shavat. So 50 days of gleaning, 50 days of working, 50 days of a relationship possibly kindling. What kind of woman this is? We're going to get the... So would somebody read 1 through 7?
Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, My daughter, shall I not seek for thee a place to rest in which it may be well with thee? Now therefore is not Boaz of our kindred with whose maidens thou hast been? Lo, he is winnowing the barley threshing floor tonight. Thou wilt therefore bathe thee and anoint thee and put thine apparel upon thee and go down to the threshing floor. Do not make thyself known unto the man until he have done eating and drinking, and it shall be when he lieth down that thou shalt mark the place where he doth lie, and shall go in, turn aside, and covering his feet, and lay thee down. And he will tell thee what thou shalt do. And she said unto her, All that thou sayest will I do. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law hath commanded her.
Can you pause right there? What's this all about? What's going on here? This is going to be from Adam Clark commentary. So they're going to talk about the living and the dead. Remember the dead. Naomi just said, Yahweh just said, this is a kindred. He is a kindred, and he can also be called a redeemer. You know who else was called a redeemer? One of the first usages of redeeming was Yahweh redeeming Israel from Egypt. Here Yahweh comes in and rescues them. Is going to redeem them. Did they deserve it?
No.
It was Yahweh said to Abraham and probably Noah and some others also. Like, wow, that's kind of neat. But here's redeeming, and he calls her. And what is this redeem? So let me see here. So here's Adam Clarkson. We talk about the word for redeeming is G-O-E-L, Goel. It signifies this is who Boaz was. He is a near kinsman, one who by the Mosaic law had a right to redeem an inheritance. What does that mean? In order to prevent families from running to decay, if a brother died childless, the next unmarried brother took his widow, and the children from that marriage were reputed the children of the deceased brother. The office of the next of kin were threefold. It belonged to him to buy back the forfeited inheritance, or the liberty of him who had been obligated to sell himself for a servant. It was his right to avenge the blood of any of the family who had been killing by killing the murderer. It belonged to him to take the widow of the deceased brother or relative if he died childless. If the nearest of kin in any case refused, he was treated with indignity, lost his right to his inheritance, and the next of kin might come forward to take the widow, as in this case. And if I have time, I'll show you some of the Levitical and the laws in Deuteronomy. The land, and it's going to say this, belongs to Yahweh. This is my land that they're inheriting, the land of Canaan. I promised to Abraham. This land, and every once in a while what happens, somebody has a family farm. Where do they get it? Well, we're the tribe of Benjamin. We're the tribe of actually Bethlehem. This belonged to Judah, right? And what happened is somebody got destitute, like Naomi. They would have to sell their land and move away. But a kinsman would have a right to buy back the family farm, to keep it in the family. So we had a family ranch. Everybody wants to keep a family farm or a ranch in the family, right? And in this case, what would happen is the kinsman redeemer would have the right to go back, and he would buy back the land that Naomi and her husband Elimelech lost. Actually, it wasn't to Elimelech, it would have been to his son. Ruth's husband would have inherited this land. So Yahweh was going to keep the land in the family. Now, in order to honor Ruth's dead husband, the kinsman redeemer is going to have a son with Ruth for this dead guy. And that son that they're going to have is going to be really accounted, I mean, this is my take, is really going to be Elimelech's grandson. I forget Ruth's husband's name. It's difficult to remember. But anyway, so that is going to be really his son, and he's going to inherit the land, and it's going to stay in Elimelech's family. This is Yahweh keeping it in the family. And so when Ruth says he's a kinsman redeemer, what does that mean, guys?
Is it right?
It means we're going to get our land back. We can't, but you can imagine Ruth, because it said early on, at the beginning of this, it said that Elimelech was a friend of Ruth's husband. Or an acquaintance. In verse 1, now Naomi had an acquaintance of her husband, a man of great integrity of the family in Elimelech. So when she comes back and brings all this food, where'd you get the food? Oh, his name's Boaz. Can you imagine the goosebumps? It's the kinsman redeemer. What does that mean? Well, you're just becoming a Hebrew. This land belongs to us, and he can buy back the land, and you're going to get pregnant, and your dead husband's going to be honored. This is the chesed for the dead husband. It's pretty foreign to us. But if you just read the rest of this, you're like, what is Naomi telling her to sneak under the covers with Boaz? What in the world is going on here, right? You'd have no idea. And actually, Adam Clark really misses it because he doesn't know the word chesed. If you read Adam Clark's notes, he's going to say, this is not a good idea. This is very bad, and it works out, but he's going to warn anybody reading it because Adam Clark doesn't know what the word chesed is. If Adam Clark would have known the chesed, he would have had a whole other appreciation. And this teaching is based off mostly Adam Clark's notes. man, at the day of resurrection, he's going to get to meet this Glulik guy, or somebody's going to explain Hesed. He's going to go, oh. Now we're going to find out what happened. Let's see here. Between verse 1 and 3. Verse 1, so here's Adam Clark's notes between 1 and 1 and 7. Here's his translations of what's going on. I should have said this at the beginning. Young's, the translator, he did the Young's Concordance, the Young's Bible. He says when translating an ancient culture or language, now he was an Englishman, he goes, there's two ways to translate it. You can make the author, the ancient author, an Englishman, or you, the Englishman, can become the ancient author. What's the better way to translate? We should become a Hebrew to understand what's going on here. Otherwise, you're going to miss it. To make Moses a Christian, a European, you know, whatever, he's not going to understand. But if we become a Hebrew, and Clark's going to help us with that. In verse 1, Naomi says, shall I not seek for thee? That is, shall I not endeavor to procure thee a proper husband? Here's Naomi after 50 days. Naomi goes, shall I not procure thee a proper husband? Verse 2. Now here's just another take on the winnowing barley, what's going on. And Paragraph Bible is going to concur with this. He that winnoweth barley tonight, okay, it is very likely that the winnowing of grain was affected by taking up a bread. What they would do is they would take the grain and they'd throw it up in the air and the wind would blow it. Well, what's interesting about this is they're going to say in this area, they would do it at night after they harvested all day because he said that the breeze from the sea was in the evening.
I'm so sorry.
That's two strikes. One more, you get voted off the island, I think, right, guys? But anyway, they're going to say this is going to be happening in the evening too, but it almost makes me think about Gideon too. Gideon was threshing stuff too when the angels showed up. If it was that night, it's a whole other story. If somebody shows up, mighty men of valor, where did you come from? If it was that night, and I didn't say that there. Verse 3. Okay, now here's the important thing. Verse 3, what Naomi's going to tell her to do. Wash thyself. She made Ruth, so there's Adam Clark, she made Ruth put on her best dress, clothing, that Boaz might in the course of the day be more attracted by her person and be the better disposed to receive her as Naomi's wished. Here's a Paragraph Bible. Going into all this, so here's a Paragraph Bible is going to explain what's really going on here. We're going to become a Hebrew. Ruth was already virtually the wife of her late husband's near kinsman. She already was his wife. According to they're going to show Deuteronomy 25 verse 5, she already belonged to Boaz. They're married, and that we would say married. But they're going to go, hey, before you start reading what's going on here, according to Yahweh's law, according to the word, they're married. I mean, and he's got a duty. It's called Hesed. You got a duty here, man. And then Naomi seems not to have been aware, however, and so this would be the next part, Naomi seems not to have been aware that there was a kinsman nearer than Boaz. As far as she knew, the closest relative to her late son was Boaz. While his character is going to go on, let's see here. They go on, talk about the evening breeze and some of these other stuff about the clothing. Verse 6. Have we read verse 6 yet? No. Oh, yeah, she's in verse 6. Go down to the threshing floor. She's going to say, go down to the threshing floor. It's at nighttime. Remember where he lies down. Make a mental note. At night. So remember where he lies down. You're going to sneak on over there. You don't want to do this next to anybody else. Okay? Because you'll read some of these other notes. They're going to say when they would thresh all this wheat, this is a lot of money. They would say they would sleep next to the grain at night. This is what Boaz is doing. The young men are with him also. So she's going to sneak in. Here's a covert operation. I want you to uncover his feet, then sleep, crawl under the covers, by his feet, then he'll tell you what to do. Get your best clothes on. Bathe yourself with oil. Get your wedding garment on. And you're like, whoa, what's going on at night here? Can you imagine her? She's out there gleaning. Hey, Joab.
Yes, Boaz.
Is Ruth wearing high heels? I thought she would. Look, she's wearing a... Hey, do you smell it? Yeah, I smell it. Is that perfume? Yeah, this has been going for 50 days. Probably some sort of possible courtship. And here's what's going to happen here is that verse 6, paragraph Bible is going to say, these were nuptial preparations. The use of the oil after bathing is very important, especially in the hot climates. Verse 7. It's going to say the clothing. Take your clothing and lay it over me. Rotherham's going to translate it correct. Take thy wing. Take thy wing is a symbol of matrimonial perfection. She's going to propose marriage. Can you imagine that, Donna?
Mm-hmm.
Want you get your best clothes on. There's going to be people there when you do this, by the way. You're going to sneak in. Crawl under his covers. When he notices you, you say, will you marry me? Can that be a little tense? What would your heart rate be like? What if he said no? What if somebody else hears this? What else could happen? Could this go wrong? Yeah, it could go really bad. This is going to be backfire. All the rest of the stuff's going on here. Let's see here. So we stopped at 7. And actually, what's more beautiful than will you marry me? Here's what Adam Clark says. When it says, take thy wing and cover of me, he's going to say, it literally means take me to wife. You are my kinsman redeemer. And you have a duty. But there's been a relationship. What kind of woman is this? What kind of man is this? And this is kind of in public at night. You're sneaked around at night. But somebody read verse 8. Somebody read verse 7 and then I'll tell you when to stop.
And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was glad, he went in to lie down at the end of the heap of corn. Then came she in softly and turned aside the covering of his feet and laid her down. And it came to pass in the middle of the night that the man started up and turned, and lo, a woman lying at his feet. And he
said, you pause there for a second. Here is this woman. I was reading Adam Clark. I was supposed to be going to bed at night, and my heart rate is going, holy moly, this thing is really escalating. You see this woman, she's got her clone on. I don't know how they dressed back then. But I was thinking of like jewelry. She got high heels and she's sleeping. She's going to go ask this guy, will you marry me? Why? Ruth told me to do this. This is how you Hebrews do this stuff. You guys are crazy. She's a Moabitess. Or was. And what's going to happen here, Boaz have a good night. It's dark. They don't have flashlights. Dawn and dusk. And here it is. There's people out there. And she comes and sneaks in. And Boaz is feeling great. Here it is. Look at this harvest. And it's great. It's Passover, guys. Passover. Jesus Christ is going to be resurrected on Passover. It's called Shavuot. Christ would have read this. And what's neat is, all I could think of is one time when I was in college. I was sleeping in my room, completely innocent. My brother Israel decided to stick a cardboard person right next to my bed at night. I'm in my bed like this. There's somebody, a 6-foot person standing on. I'm like, oh. Adam Clark has all kinds of commentary. They go, he was as frozen as a turnip and all kinds of other things where people are saying, what happened to this guy? He's an old man too. He's somebody right there. There's a woman. And he's like, you can imagine his heart right here. Whoa, whoa. Shh. Will you marry me? What? Okay, now read verse 9.
And he said, who art thou? And she said, I am Ruth, thy handmaid. Spread therefore thy wing over thy handmaid, for a kinsman thou art.
How nervous was she?
Yeah.
She lost her husband. And now she's going to go ask somebody to marry her? You think she's vulnerable right now?
Mm-hmm.
You think she was nervous? I would have been quivering or shaking. I used to feel sorry for guys that got to propose in front of people. Here she is. She's going to say, take me to wife. Okay?
And he said, blessed be thou of Yahweh, my daughter, for thou hast made thy last has said better than the first, in not falling after young men, whether poor or rich.
Pause right there. You'll totally miss one of the most important parts of all this. He says, and Adam Clark misses this, but if you take E.W. Bullinger, said and all the rest is, because Adam Clark, I think it was Adam Clark in the paragraph one, they miss it. He says the last has said better than the first. What was her first has said?
With her dead.
For her dead husband. What was she doing? Taking care of her mother-in-law. That's the first has said. Honoring. Now what is she going to do? Well, you're going to miss it if you don't read this next thing because, well, he's got a business. He's successful, it would appear, right? Mm-hmm. She's broke, it would appear, right? Well, that's what she's doing, right? But what is he saying in the next scripture? What is greater than the first in not falling after what?
Young men.
Whether
poor or rich.
Or rich. She had options. She could have married a young man. She could have married a young rich man. Why is she proposing marriage to an older Boaz who is not? She could have married a rich person. Because it's the chesed to her dead husband. He is he's a kinsman redeemer. She's obeying the word. And here's Boaz. He said, Yahweh be with you. And here she is presenting. Can you imagine what happened? This fellowship at night under the covers, this whispering. Gonna go, can you believe it? Could she get any better? And here's Boaz. And then he's gonna say she could have young, good looking guys. She could have rich guys. Why is she here? She's still honoring. And who is watching all this? Y'all, start reading again, please.
Now therefore, my daughter, do not fear thee. But do not fear. Whatsoever thou shalt say, I will do for thee. For all the gate of my people doth know that a virtuous woman thou art. And now, although it is true that a kinsman I am, yet there is a kinsman nearer than I. Tarry the night, and it shall be in the morning. If he will act as kinsman to thee, well, let him so act. But if he inclineth not to act as kinsman to thee, then will I so act to thee by the life of Yahweh. Lie still until.
Wait, what did he just say? I will marry you by the life of Yahweh. I will take thee to wife.
If the other guy goes.
This is at night. This is under the covers. This is in the dark, probably whispering. You're like, man, he also said, was she probably nervous? I believe that's why he said, we all know you're a virtuous woman. You're not sneaking in here for anything. I mean, yeah. Because I will marry you. I will take thee to wife. Okay, now, lie. He's going to say, lie still until the morning. So she lay at his feet until the morning. Oh my goodness, could you sleep, Donna? Are you getting married or are you not getting married? What's going to happen? Do people know I'm here? Did they hear me? Is my dress dirty? Could you sleep? Here he is, he goes lay down. She just really proposed marriage. I mean, not really, but that's me throwing into it. You think, well, how easy would it be for you to sleep that night? As soon as the sun goes up, I got to go talk to this other kinsman redeemer. I told her I'd do it. Yahweh, I'll marry her. I go, man, she's young. And all these the commentaries, I say, she's very attractive, too. And here they're going to go. I thought about that. I go, my dad go right to sleep. I wouldn't. Dad, I'd see you in the morning. But here she's going to lay. Verse 14, so she lay at his feet until morning and rose up before one could know her neighbor. So it's dark, which is important. And he said, do not let it be... He said, do not let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. So you can imagine people in the morning. Morning. Man, did you hear whispering last night? Yeah, I heard a girl whispering. Boaz was like, shh. What? No, I really heard a girl whispering in here last night. Boaz would be like, shh. Don't tell anybody there's a girl here tonight. And they'd be like, all right, Boaz, man. All right. I want to keep my job. And all I can think of is, as I read that, I imagine Israel and his sons coming over. We're going to go hunting or something. And they come walking in. They open up the door in the morning. And all of a sudden, a girl comes taking off my back door. And Izzy and Elijah be like... And I'd be like, shh. They'd be like, yeah, all right. What's this all about? Because they don't necessarily know it later on. But man, this is... You can do a whole movie on this. What's happening? What's going on? Now, obviously, he's righteous. So they're not going to think of anything wicked. But still, wouldn't you be... What's... There was a girl. What was she doing here? I don't know. So he said, bring the, let's see here, he's going to give her like 6.5 gallons of possibly up to 6.5 gallons of corn or meal. Let me see here. Oh, okay. And verse 18, when she comes back to her mother-in-law doesn't recognize her, so it must still be dark. In verse 18, and she said, Mom, would you read that?
And she said, abide my daughter until that thou get to know how the matter will fall out. For the man will not rest except he have finished the thing today.
We just gotta wait. That's it. That's it.
No.
Can you imagine Naomi? They're broke, possibly. You proposed marriage. How else did it go? Did anybody else? Can you imagine how nervous she would have been? She's a virtuous woman, and all the rest of this stuff. What were they doing the whole day? What time is it now? Now, instead of reading chapter 4, this is an incredible thing. What was one of Adam Clark's vocations, Dad? He had several vocations. I believe in an attorney. I could be wrong with that. But I believe one of his vocations was a possible attorney. But anyways, we're going to read chapter 4 of Ruth, which is really, really, really important. Actually, Mom's just going to read the commentary. What in the world's going on in chapter 4? So if you just read the highlighted, okay?
Verse 1. Then went Boaz up to the gate. We have often had occasion to remark that the gate or entrance to any city or town was the place where the court of justice was ordinarily kept, for an account of the officers in such place, blah, blah, blah. Oh, such a one, sit down here. This familiar mode of compilation is first used here. He took 10 men. Probably it required this number to constitute a court. How simple and how rational was this proceeding? The man who had a suit went to the city gates. Here he stopped till the person with whom he had the suit came to the gate on his way to work. He called by name and he stopped and sat down. Then 10 elders were called and they came and sat down. When all this was done, the appellant preferred his suit. When the appellee returned his answer. When the elders heard the case and the response of the appellee, they pronounced judgment, which judgment was always according to the custom of the place. When this was done, the people who happened to be present witnessed the issue. And thus the business was settled without lawyers or legal causatry. A question of this kind in one of our courts of justice in these enlightened times would require many days previous preparation of the attorney and several hours arguing between counselor Botherum and conscientious judge would find it extremely difficult to decide whether Naomi might sell her own land and whether Boaz or Poloni might buy it. Oh, glorious uncertainty of modern law. Naomi selleth a parcel of land. She was reduced to want. The immediate inheritors were extinct, and it was now open for the next heir to purchase the land and thus preserve the inheritance in the family according to the custom of Israel. The text corrected reads,
And I said,
I will reveal this to that ear, saying, buy it before the inhabitants and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, tell me that I may know. For there is none to redeem it but thou and I who am next to thee. And he said, I will redeem it. And Boaz said, in the day that thou redeemest the land from the hand of Naomi, thou wilt also acquire Ruth, the wife of the dead, that thou mayest raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance. This is Boaz's statement of the case before the kinsmen and before the people and the elders. I will redeem it. I will pay down the money which it is worth. He knew not the following condition. Thou must buy it also of Ruth. More properly, thou wilt also acquire Ruth. Thou canst not get the land without taking the wife of the deceased, and then the children which thou mayest have shall be reputed the children of Mahlon, thy deceased kinsman. I cannot redeem it for myself. The Targum gives the proper sense of this passage.
So you can pause there for a second. One of the explanations they believe why the kinsman redeemer would not have done it, there was a guy that's closer. He's explaining the legal thing that's happening here. He's also saying, this is the way things should be happening. And he's going, look, he goes, you would have went to the city gate. You would have waited for the guy that comes up. You would have said, hey, come sit over here. You would go get 10 elders. And then you would discuss, he calls it a suit, the issue. Ruth has come back, and we need a kinsman redeemer to buy back the parcel land. You're first before me. Will you buy it back? And he goes, 1 Corinthians 6 says, dare you have a suit against your, dare you take a Christian to the court? And he's going, how easy would life be if people actually did this? And what they're doing is actually Deuteronomy 16:8. That's what people are supposed to do, not go to court. You get 10, here's 10 witnesses, and he's going to say, you're the nearer the kin, but if you're not going to redeem the land, I will redeem the land. The guy goes, I'll redeem the land. He goes, but you're also going to have to marry Ruth. And notice how he said it. I think it was very smart how he did it. He just didn't say it. The guy goes, I cannot redeem it. And one of the reasons it might have been, he's married, had a happy marriage.
He said, I have a wife already.
That's the Targum. That's not necessarily in the scriptures. But the guy had a really good marriage. I'm not getting, you're single, you marry her. You know, which just makes sense. It doesn't mean this guy's backing out necessarily. Now you go down to verse 7.
A man plucked off his shoe. The law of such a case is given at large in Deuteronomy. It was simply this. If a brother who had married a wife died without children, the eldest brother was to take the widow and raise up a family to the brother deceased, and he had a right to redeem the inheritance if it had been alienated. But if the person who had the right of redemption would not take the woman, she was to pull off his shoe and spit in his face, and he was ever after considered a disgraced man. It's not very likely that any writing was drawn up. There was an appeal made to the people then present whether they had seen and understood the transaction, who answered, we have witnessed it. If any minutes of court were kept, then the transaction was entered probably in some such words as, on this day of this, Boaz bought the land of Elimelech from Naomi, the widow, and took Ruth, her daughter-in-law, to wife, who had the nearest right, refusing to buy the land on the condition of interest.
And so with the taking the shoe off, if he would have refused it, the widow was supposed to take his shoe off and spit in his face. That was actually, I think it was Levitical law. I do have that written down here somewhere. But he's explained that is if she refused it, well, the other guy didn't refuse it. But we're going to see that the guy that did agree this in front of everybody, Boaz does take his shoe off. And they're going to agree in front of everybody. Now this is, in this commentary, so you have these 10, chapter 4, verse 11. So here's the 10 witnesses watching this. Think about this. They're getting to see the chesed being, isn't that, what a beautiful story. Here's this Naomi. And they're going to say Bethlehem was a very small village at this point too. And they're going to go, look what's that. It is beautiful. And here's what they said, verse 11. Here's the 10 elders. Then said all the people who were in the gate, the elders, witness, Yahweh grant the woman who is coming into thy house, what a woman she is, to be as Rachel and as Leah, which then did build the house of Israel, do thou bravely then in Ephrathah, and proclaim thou a name of Bethlehem, and let thy house be like the house of Perez, who came on board of Judah, of the sea which made Yahweh bring of this young woman. And it says that Boaz took his shoe. The paragraph Bible, it has in here too, but we're running short on time, is going to say when Judah had a very unusual thing with Tamar, his daughter-in-law, what did she do to say they had an agreement? Anybody?
Tamar.
She says, give me your
shoe.
Staff.
And I think a signet ring. And so if you did a covenant, if they didn't have paper documents, they had paper documents in Jeremiah's hand back then, they didn't. He had witnesses, and they would say they had exchanged shoes until it was done. And so it doesn't say this. So I heard other teachings saying that what you would do is if Austin and I came into a very serious covenant, we would exchange shoes until the contract was complete. And then that would have been a sign to say, okay, there's also salt covenants and these other things. That doesn't necessarily say that. But what's neat is, can you imagine? You see this right here?
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you imagine the adrenaline inside Boaz's heart after this goes through? He takes his sandal. What if he did put it on his foot? Most likely it wouldn't fit. But it'd be a reminder, you have a covenant. Can you imagine him walking back to find Naomi? And they're looking, where is he? They've been waiting all day. Where is he? Where the heck is he? What do you mean? Where is this guy? And maybe he stopped for lunch. And could you imagine him walking down the street, saying two different shoes? And then he's saying verse 13, so Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And they went into her, and Yahweh granted her conception. You got to see what they say about the child. And the child that they end up having is Obed, the father of Jesse, the father of King David. And it goes on to say, how beautiful is that? But you wouldn't, if you just read the book of Ruth, that was one of my favorite stories. But thanks to my dad giving me this commentary, we can become a Hebrew and start looking into these things. But it should really inspire all of us with Yahweh's has said, healings, unanswered prayers. You go back to say, did you do this? You do this? Did you do this? Did you do this? You do this? Then I'm relying on your chesed. Mm-hmm. King David would have done the same thing. And what does that? What does that mean to Yahweh? My son, every once in a while, he'll call me out on a promise. No, I'm not Yahweh. Sometimes I'm a little loose with my promises. But he goes, you said this. You said this. You said this. And I'll go, you're right. And so we can do the same thing with Yahweh. Stand on his promises. Not just hoping, not just waiting. Father, we thank you for your word. We thank you for Adam Clark, for E.W. Bollinger. We thank you for Joseph Rotherham and for the Paragraph Bible, for my dad getting all these things to us. And by the way, on the website, if you go to www.teliosministries.com, you scroll down to books at the bottom, you can download the Paragraph Bible. You want to do the Old Testament, if you want to look at Ruth, there's a New Testament also. You can do E.W. Bollinger's notes too, and you can actually get the Rotherham, and he does all the work of these other commentary. He just does the work. He's going to put but anyways, it's all free.
The Hesed book too.
Yeah, the Hesed book's on there too. You can get a PDF, you can do a screenshot, and what I was going to do is if anybody wants to just read these notes and combine, it's incredible. But Teleos Ministries is already there. Boys, thank you for these words also, for the healing in Dad and Melania and Donna's life. Do not be fearful of the future, because if you're obedient, I'm obedient. I always keep my promises. And when it looks like there's long shots and when you feel lonely, strengthen yourself with your own mouth. Use your mouth like a row, like an oar, to row yourself in the direction of success. Because there is success and there is promises. But I want you to earn things. You need to prove some things. And sometimes I've done all that I can do and I need you to start paddling. As if it was a life, I could see somebody even right now that there's a river, and somebody is being washed down a river, and they're screaming for help, and somebody crawls out on a branch, and they're reaching out saying, I'm right here, but you gotta come this way, at least a little bit, you gotta fight. So is Yahweh in Christ. Ask you, fight, fight, fight. As you do so, they'll honor you with their chesed. Amen. Hallelujah.